Yesterday, in the second session, we explored the difference in a way, the simple nature of experience, the simplicity of the practice itself, and the complexity that that simplicity of awareness can reveal. And so the teachings kind of go back and forth between these, describing the complexity, describing what can be experienced. And it can be useful to hear about that. At times, it can be useful to understand something about the nature of how our minds do what they do, because it can help us to begin to recognize it, not by trying to find it or by trying to look for it, but by just being with experience, having the understanding that things can be seen there. Sometimes having a description of something can help us to see something that's there that we haven't really seen before. And yet, the practice is fundamentally just being with experience and noticing what's obvious, what's the next moment, the next moment, the next moment. And some of the complexity of experience that's revealed does happen with the momentum of mindfulness, with the seeing an unfolding experience over time, conditioning how one experience conditions the next is seen by watching it happen as it happens. Not by having something happen and then trying to figure out what happened, like looking back and saying, how did that happen? What happened before that? That's just the conceptual, that's just the thinking mind trying to figure something out. So, really, it is in this place of just being with experience that this conditioned nature of experience is revealed. A question that was submitted feels very fortuitous in a way. This question came in after I had already decided to explore conditionality this morning, but the question: I wonder how to better understand bodily sensations and their causes. Often I ask myself how to find out if an unpleasant bodily sensation is caused by something that can be seen in the mind, for example, fear or anger, or if it is rather structural, physiological. I think one could also say how to find out whether a more or less specific body discomfort has an origin in its psyche, or is it caused by physiological structural conditions of the body. Again, the exploration of this isn't about trying to look back. This experience happening now, what conditioned it? What's happening in the present moment when we open to the present moment? There can be some information about those conditions. So, it's like there's something happening in the body right now. When we open to what's here now, curious about, for instance, the attitude with that experience, we can sometimes recognize that in this moment, the attitude of mind is shaping and conditioning in this moment the body experience. We can see, for instance, if that attitude of mind, so physical discomfort, for example, arising in the present moment. We notice that physical sensation, the unpleasantness of it, how unpleasant it is. Maybe then we think, oh, what's the relationship? We notice fear or aversion in the mind connected to that. Now, already happening present in the present moment. We might then see that as that fear is recognized, there's the understanding or the distinction between the unpleasantness of the fear, the unpleasantness of the aversion, and the unpleasantness of the body sensation. We might see that in the present moment and understand that the experience, because in that moment we begin to clearly recognize, oh, the unpleasant sensation in the body actually isn't as strong as I thought. Oh, the fear is there. Maybe then we even see the fear disappear and we see, oh, this is what the actual unpleasantness of the body sensation is. So we're witnessing as with that simple awareness, we just witness what's here moment to moment. And the conditioning reveals itself in the moment. That's kind of the level of understanding, seeing it happen. It's almost at the insight level when we see that and understand something. Sometimes that insight level is a little bit more reflective. Sometimes it's got some thought associated with it. Like what I was saying, it's like, oh, wow, you know, maybe some thoughts arise in the mind while looking at this. Oh, that there's the body and then there's the unpleasantness of fear. Wow, they're different. So maybe that's coming at a reflective level at a little bit. So a little bit, not quite at the deep seeing level. Sometimes it might just come as an understanding, seeing, for instance, the fear maybe vanish, and then clearly understanding how much of the suffering was connected to the fear because the fear disappeared and most of the suffering disappeared in that moment. So we see these connections at different levels, sometimes at almost a nonverbal level. Just the feeling of being released from suffering. Not necessarily articulated in the mind, not necessarily expressed with any words, but just the feeling of suffering's gone. And then just the kind of appreciation of that, the joy or the delight of like, wow, that's gone. So in terms of this investigation around body sensations and mind, that question is a great question to hold. Whoever asked that question, you know, just hold the question in the mind. How might the mind see the difference between body sensation and mind and see how they're interconnected? Allowing the simple awareness to reveal those connections. And there are times, I found at certain points in practice, it can be useful to highlight one particular area of experience. For me, for instance, certain aspects of the mind weren't quite so clear. And so at one point, Saito was talking a lot about perception. And really, I think it was just the conversations that happened. He was talking about how perception and delusion connected and how delusion kind of co-opted perception into its realm, having us believe essentially what we were perceiving was real, was actually a thing as opposed to a concept or a thought in our mind. So the process of perception, one of these conditioned processes. So he was talking a lot about perception, and that kind of arose that question in my mind. How does perception work? I think it was very much conditioned, that question of how does perception work? But it became the question for the meditation. And over a couple of, I don't know how long, at least a week, maybe two, the orientation of the mindfulness was around curiosity about how is perception happening and what is being perceived and how is that influencing things? How is the habit of mind influencing the perception? So sometimes we can kind of orient towards a particular aspect of experience that can help the mind to begin to understand something. And it's often also very useful not to have a particular, it's like if those particular curiosities or questions are kind of naturally arising, I'd say that's a great time to let those questions just be there and see how they, those kinds of questions can tend to influence or shape how we're receiving experience, what we're receiving in experience. Our attitudes, our agendas, our questions can actually shape what we see. It's quite amazing to see this whole thing at work. And so this question arising for this person, it's a great question to have. But not looking back, not trying to figure it out in the past, by meeting with simple awareness this moment, this moment, this moment, with the curiosity, what is body in this experience? What is mind in this experience? There's often a back and forth interweaving of conditioning between body and mind. And really useful to notice that so much of what we kind of attribute as something physical is a combination of physical and mental. A couple of questions that feel kind of connected to this exploration around conditionality. One, the conditions of how and where we are in the world. It's not just the conditions arising in our own bodies and minds. We are also conditioned by external phenomenon and then how we relate to that. So the external conditions connect with our history, our conditioning, and there's something unique that that arises within us in response to that. And so a question around how does this practice work in an environment of sensory overwhelm? So I think that one of the important pieces is to recognize the relationship. Feeling overwhelmed. Just acknowledge, first acknowledging that, you know, that so there's just tremendous amount of sense impression coming in. We don't have to force ourselves to try to stay with all of the kind of flood of sensations. If the overwhelm is happening, sometimes the experience of overwhelming or kind of closing down or kind of a sense of distancing ourselves from something, sometimes that can be wisdom supporting us to navigate something that our system is overwhelmed by. So that's the first piece, to not say or have the idea that, okay, being aware in this kind of practice means I have to stay like with this incredible overwhelming experience. If there's overwhelm happening, notice the overwhelm and potentially, you know, especially if it's pulling you out, we've talked about this a lot. If whatever's happening, whether it's an emotional experience, physical sensations, or overwhelm, let your attention come perhaps to something simpler. Sometimes we have that luxury. Sometimes we can do that. It might simply be, you know, letting your, if it's like navigating through the busy streets of a city like in New York or something like that, if it's navigating an overwhelming environment, sometimes you can just narrow your sense impressions, and just kind of focus a little bit more closely in, or not try to take in all the detail. Just, kind of allowing that sense of needing to protect the system in a way, because sometimes it can be too overwhelming. And in that overwhelm, we may not be able to make skillful decisions or actually navigate life terribly well. So sometimes we may need to kind of narrow in. So, honoring the overwhelm. Really, I'd say honor the overwhelm. Potentially, if you have the option, let yourself come out of sensory overwhelm for a while. Give yourself a break from it. Find a place where you can close your eyes, even put earplugs in or something. Just give yourself a break from it. If it's taking you out of awareness or exacerbating a reactivity, making a reactivity a lot stronger, that's not a place or a way where mindfulness can really connect and support us. So we do need to find a way to find some balance. So the conditions of practice and how we respond and relate to practice, I mentioned earlier that we kind of harness in a way the unfolding of conditioning, or we align our practice with the unfolding of conditioning in a way that supports us to move to deeper understanding, wisdom, and release from suffering. And sometimes that means understanding that this situation is too overwhelming to try to meet with mindfulness, and so simplifying in some way. At times, we may not be able to simplify the environment, and kind of like we have to do the best we can, especially in daily life. Do the best we can with navigating the world, the situation. It may be helpful to recognize, wow, really overwhelmed right now. Maybe this isn't the time to make a lot of decisions. So perhaps, recognizing the stimulation is so strong, there is overwhelm. So just knowing that there may be some capacity to, kind of refrain from acting out of the overwhelm because we know the overwhelm. Because it's present. Even if it's, we talked about the attitude. So the overwhelm is a kind of an attitude in the mind. It's connected, that overwhelm in the mind is possibly connected with prior history, prior conditioning. Physical may be connected with physical s situation. I know for myself, when I'm tired or hungry, I have less capacity. Or if I have an illness, I have a little less capacity, and so it's easier for situations to feel overwhelming. And so to honor the experience. Honor how you are and where you are. And that honoring as best we can to meet what's here with the mindfulness that is here. And when there is a space or a time to maybe let some of that over, because I think sometimes when there's an overwhelming situation, it's like that all of the sensations, the impact on the body, it feels like we're a bell that's been rung really, really loudly. So there's a resonance or a kind of a reverberation. And sometimes we need to have a space or a time to just let that reverberation end. It's like, you're when you're in that stimulation, it's like you're continually hitting the bell. And there's maybe the situation is continually hitting the bell, and you know the reverberation keeps going, but we need some time to just let the reverberation dissipate. So sometimes the physical overwhelm has that kind of quality. It's like you're in a situation, you know that bells keep getting struck every split second. There's more being struck. And so there may need to be a time where you find a way to simplify and just let that reverberation kind of dissipate, like the sound of the bell dissipates when it's no longer being struck. Another question or comment, actually more, it's a comment. Today, while sitting, I became aware of how the silence I'm afraid of being alone with is actually not silence at all, but a cacophony of so much noise, and that I'm using more noise to drown out the noise. And then I became aware of how I was trying to construct a thesis with this understanding and the other understandings that would follow with the observations, and the awareness ebbed and flowed in this way. So I think this is a kind of a seeing of how conditions play out. That, you know, we see that our minds, you know, that there's a fear. In this case, there's this fear that, and the idea is that there's a fear of silence. But then the actual witnessing shows that what we thought of as silence was actually a cacophony. And I had this experience, I think, at the, this kind of, maybe similar, I don't know, at the end of my very first retreat. You know, I kept hearing the teachers say, you know, your mind is getting really quiet. And I thought, you know, there's an awful lot of talking going on in there. But there's a kind of a gradual setting. This was my first 10-day retreat. There's kind of a gradual settling that happened over those 10 days that was so imperceptible, so gradual, that I didn't really see that the mind was way quieter than it had been. And in fact, that quietness allowed there to be an awareness of all of the thoughts and all of the stuff that was going on. And then the end of the retreat came, and we were, you know, talking and everything. And I went back to my room, and I was kind of like, wow, it feels like my mind is just spinning. And I went back to my room, and in the quiet of my room, and the capacity of mindfulness to see what was going on, it felt like I had 5 radios playing in my head simultaneously, talking about different things. And it's like, oh my gosh, is this what my mind is usually doing? It was kind of startling to see just how much noise there is in there. The quiet of the mind settling and the capacity of mindfulness can reveal that. And so my guess is that the awareness in this, from this person, the awareness that's been strengthened during this time is allowing there to be the revealing of what's actually going on there. And then seeing, you know, how we respond to that. So the not clearly seeing of it, it's shaping our experience without our clearly understanding what's going on. And then seeing that, oh, there's this cacophony of stuff, and actually what I'm trying to do is drown it out. Trying to drown that out. So this is actually how the practice unfolds. We see the conditions in the moment. This understanding didn't come because the person sat there and thought back, well, what was going on before this? It was revealed right in the present moment.